The struggle over ratification of the Panama Canal treaties is now more complex than ever before. The center remains the reservation attached to the first one by Senator Dennis DeConcini of Arizona, giving the United States the right to send troops into Panama to keep the canal in operation. Panamanian opinion is outraged at what is called a last gasp of Yankee imperialism. And liberal senators who agree say that the reservation distorts the meaning of the treaties. They want now to add a reservation of their own, reaffirming the United States policy of non-intervention in Panama. At this point, Neil Strauser reports that Senate leaders have blown the whistle for a brief time out while they devise a play they hope will score.
The Senate is in recess until Monday after completing its consideration of the text of the second treaty and rejecting all changes. Senate leaders called off today's session because they wanted to avoid any floor statements that might upset the delicate backstage negotiations still underway on a non-intervention resolution that will placate Panama and a group of strong pro-treaty senators demanding some action and still not offend backers of Democrat Dennis DeConcini, whose reservation on military action to keep the canal open has Panama upset. At this point, sources close to the leadership will say only that the possibility of agreement is there. It is too early to tell. The American Conservative Union, in the meantime, is planning to spend this last weekend before the final vote, still trying to whip up constituent sentiment back home against the treaties. It is planning to spend up to $50,000 for television spots in half a dozen states where senators voted yes on the first treaty. Neil Strauser, CBS News, the U.S. Senate.
J. Wallace LaPrade, removed yesterday as chief of the FBI's New York Bureau, told the CBS Morning News this morning that the Bureau continues investigations in a warrantless area. But he refused to say it was engaged in illegal activities. Under present law, the Bureau may tap wires and conduct bugging in search of information on the authority of the President and the orders of the Attorney General, but only in national security cases involving foreign intelligence. Such activities may be pursued in domestic criminal cases only with a court warrant. LaPrade says Congress should pass a law to deal with warrantless investigations. The government-run Israeli radio says that the United States is holding up shipments of cluster bombs to Israel, and Israeli newspapers quote sources in Washington as saying that the use of these bombs will affect the supply of American arms to Israel in the future. It is also reported that the Carter administration is pressing Israel to set a terminal date for the total withdrawal of its troops from southern Lebanon. Today, Israel completed stage two of an announced plan to pull soldiers back from forward positions. Bruno Wassertile was on the scene.
That's the sound of Israeli armor pulling out of southern Lebanon. Here in the large and now empty Muslim town of Taiba, Israeli half-tracks, armored personnel carriers, and trucks are churning up the dust and heading south toward the Israeli border. A short while ago, Israeli forces in this town and eight other key points in the central sector of the front bordering on the Litani River handed over their positions to UN soldiers from Nepal, many of whom were carrying their long Gurkha daggers in their belts in addition to toting the standard submachine guns. The switch went smoothly, and the commander of UN forces in southern Lebanon, Ghanaian General Emmanuel Erskine, expressed full satisfaction with the way things were proceeding. Bruno Wassertile for CBS News in Taiba, southern Lebanon.
Middle East diplomacy figured last night in a Washington statement. More from Marvin Kalb.
White House officials say that by stressing the importance of broadened negotiations in the Middle East, the Carter administration did not mean to sidetrack the Sadat initiative and resurrect the option of a Geneva conference, including what are called appropriate Palestinians. But that is the impression left by the communique wrapping up the president's 2 days of talks here with President Ceausescu of Romania, the only East European leader who maintains diplomatic relations with the Arabs and with Israel. In recent weeks, Romania, Syria, and the Palestine Liberation Organization have all again begun calling for the reconvening of the Geneva Conference. Syria and the PLO say the Sadat initiative is dead. Ceausescu says it is not dead, but it should now be made to coexist within a Geneva framework. By joining in this communique with Ceausescu, the administration appears to be siding once again with the pro-Geneva conference forces, at best softening its support for an Egyptian-Israeli deal that could then be packaged as the first step towards a broad Middle East settlement. Marvin Kalb, CBS News, the State Department.
Secretary of State Cyrus Vance is in Dar es Salaam, capital of Tanzania, working now on the Rhodesian aspect of his mission to Southern Africa. Bernard Kalb reports.
The diplomatic players are now all in place. The negotiations have begun. The results still uncertain. First, Britain's Foreign Secretary David Owen arrived this morning from London saying somehow we've got to keep moving. Once we all give up on a negotiated settlement for Rhodesia, then all there is conflict. Next, Secretary Vance met with Tanzania's President Nyerere, the most influential African leader in the area. Nyerere has been encouraging the Rhodesian guerrilla chiefs to drop their objections to certain aspects of an Anglo-American plan that would introduce black majority rule in Rhodesia. Vance emerged from that session with a bit of news he was ready to talk about, that his meeting with the guerrilla leaders, Joshua Nkomo and Robert Mugabe, has been advanced. They'll be meeting today rather than tomorrow. What Vance and Owen are trying to do is to get them to agree to a peace conference with Rhodesia's Prime Minister Smith and Rhodesia's black political leaders. The impression here is that the guerrillas may go along with the Anglo-American request if Vance and Owen can get the Rhodesian leaders to reverse their opposition and agree to a conference. Bernard Kalb, CBS News, Dar es Salaam.
Speaking last night at Cornell University, Britain's former Prime Minister Edward Heath declared that changes of attitude in the United States after Vietnam and Watergate and the reversion of power from the presidency to the Congress have created new conditions for foreign policy. For one thing, said Heath, Europe may no longer depend on the United States to set things right everywhere, but must pitch in to help. In Europe, the same problem tends to be seen from the negative side, as Tom Fenton observed.
Throughout Europe, government officials privately and leading newspapers publicly are becoming increasingly critical of President Carter. The chief complaint is that the Carter administration is inept. The criticism extends to both foreign and domestic policy. The president's decision to put off construction of the neutron bomb raised a storm of criticism in European capitals. The West German magazine Der Spiegel reported that Chancellor Schmidt believes the president is an amateur who tries to impose his private morals on the world. There's even greater uneasiness over Mr. Carter's economic policy. Roy Jenkins, the president of the Common Market Commission, accused him of evading his responsibilities to countries which use the dollar as a reserve currency. The president is also criticized for inability to get his energy bill through Congress and thereby help the dollar. In general, the main criticisms leveled at the Carter administration are that it is inexperienced and unpredictable, and that the president is not providing the kind of strong leadership Western Europe expects from Washington. Tom Fenton, CBS News, Paris.
In Rutherford, New Jersey, a community of 20,000 people, an inexplicably high rate of leukemia, a form of cancer of the blood, has been found among school children. Last night, anxious parents met with state officials to discuss what is going on and what might be done. Walt Wheeler of station WCBS has the story.
The high school auditorium in this New York suburb was packed, 750 seats, other people standing, as New Jersey State epidemiologist Dr. Ronald Altman told residents that the leukemia rate at their Pierpont Elementary School over the past 5 years is significantly abnormal. Six cases among pupils there, when statistics say average incidence would be a little less than one. And for the town as a whole, said Altman, there's a significant excess incidence, as the scientists put it, of Hodgkin's disease, a related cancer. Altman and the others tried to be reassuring within the limits of their knowledge, but many of those who joined the question and answer period afterward here were clearly upset and hostile, asking what can be done, and getting the answer, we don't know. Getting repeated references to the inability of scientists who studied earlier clusters in places like Niles, Illinois, and Elmwood, Wisconsin, to identify either causes or cures. Walt Wheeler for CBS News, Rutherford, New Jersey.
The state has promised an environmental investigation, but one woman who lives in a 10-block area in which leukemia cases are clustered said they should do something, not just pacify us with words. They have millions to spend on the moon. They can do something for our children.